LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
You know, now I know how the great Billy Graham felt, because it's the same feeling. We love Billy Graham. We love Billy Graham.
That's Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump speaking Friday night before a large crowd in Mobile, Alabama. He mentions Billy Graham. That's always going to get a cheer in Alabama, any place in the South. And, of course, the South is crucial for anyone who wants to be in the White House. Donald Trump certainly wants to be. Now, how do you explain the fact that even a couple of weeks ago, we had a Washington Post ABC News poll that talked about Donald Trump? He was polling very strongly among what was called evangelical-leaning Republicans, or maybe it was Republican-leaning evangelicals. How do you explain that? And how do you explain the fact that every night you can turn on television and it doesn't matter what network news program you're watching, it's Donald Trump all the time? What kind of a candidacy is this, and how is the media contributing to it? What does the media have a plan for Donald Trump as well? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Thursday afternoon, the 27th of August. Terry Mattingly will join us here for about a half hour. We're going to talk about Donald Trump and evangelical voters. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us after that. We'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 4 and finding Christ there in the Old Testament. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's senior fellow for media and religion at King's College in New York City, and he's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
What did you make of this? This was about a week, 10 days ago, when the Washington Post ABC News poll had, and I just thought to myself, how in the world? But I want your reaction when they said that Donald Trump was leading among evangelical-leaning Republicans, or I can't remember if it was also Republican-leaning evangelicals. It was one or the other. What was your reaction?
Well, we'll get to that question in half a second, because there have been even wilder headlines. I mean, calling him the evangelical hero, and the Daily Beast had this wild thing about why evangelicals are crazy about Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera. But before we get to that, let me flip this thing around. Since people, our listeners, have just heard that clip of Trump, I think it's important to set the scene for that remark. He walked out into a football stadium and just shouted, wow, 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 unbelievable, unbelievable, this is so beautiful, and then comes that quote. Now we know how the great Billy Graham is feel. We love Billy Graham, et cetera, et cetera. So let me ask you a question before we wander into the polls and what headlines are doing with all this. Why do you think the first thing out of Donald Trump's mouth in a football stadium in Mobile, Alabama, was to sing the praises of Billy Graham?
Well, it could be that Donald Trump is a lot smarter than people give him credit for, and he might realize that the last time evangelicalism was united in any sense was in the era of the great Billy Graham.
Yeah, or he also could just trying to be saying, hey, I can speak Southern. I mean, this guy is about as New York as you get. I mean, New York by way of West Palm Beach, I just cursed him in Florida terms. Palm Beach, not West Palm Beach. The man is on Palm Beach Island, the world's richest community, acre per acre. But, some people are saying that this is one of the most shameless things he's ever done. Plus, as I wrote it in my column this week, I don't think Billy Graham has ever faced a football stadium of people jumping up and down, waving banners with his one name, Billy, on a banner, while waving licensed merchandise. I mean, that's probably not Billy's normal operating, environment, at a crusade. So I think we'd have to say that on one level, Trump's comment was either shameless, on another, it was just emotionally manipulative. And your point that it's smart in that nobody is going to come anywhere near the Republican nomination this year without the ability to pretty much sweep the Bible Belt. I mean, whoever gets momentum in the North, it doesn't matter at all if you can't come down and carry the Sun Belt, you know, with Sun Belt Republicans who tend to be more morally and culturally conservative, which is what he's doing in Mobile, Alabama right now, instead of probably going to a place he knows better, which is the resorts of New England. So I think you're right that he's being smart, but what I want listeners to really think about is the degree to which that comment just makes no sense coming out of the mouth of Donald Trump. You know, a whatever you want to say of him, he is a morally creative man.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, don't make me go there. Okay, he's been married 3 times. He seems like he's perfectly willing to say anything about anybody at any point in time. Whatever one wants to say about Billy Graham as a public statesman, he's had a long career with the possible exception of private remarks in the late Richard Nixon era, for which Graham publicly repented many, many times. Can you think of anyone in American life who has been as famous as Billy Graham, as long as Billy Graham has been famous, who has had a more graceful and less messed up career?
No.
I mean, at that point, would it be safe to say that that's like kind of like the direct opposite, the mirror image of Donald Trump?
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment.
So that's my point. What the heck? I mean, if this guy's so into Billy Graham, wouldn't there be other things that we may have noticed in the past? Now, I don't know if our listeners realize this. One of the more interesting things about Donald Trump is the fact that he was raised listening to the preaching, literally as a boy and as a young man, listening to the preaching of another great figure in American religion. And that, of course, was at the Marble Church in New York City. He grew up listening to Norman Vincent Peale. And what is Norman Vincent Peale known for?
Power of positive thinking.
Power of positive thinking. Now, that rings some bells for Donald Trump, right? I mean, so to me, if he wanted to have stood up there in Mobile, Alabama, and praised Norman Vincent Peale, that would have made some sense based on his own personal biography. I'm not sure how that would go over, you know, with modern people in the South at this point. So thus we have him kind of, I think the Southern word, kowtowing. Is that a Southern word, or is that? Anyway, so thus we have him throwing the name Billy Graham out as the first things out of his mouth before he goes on to praise Rush Limbaugh, somebody else who doesn't have a whole lot in common with the life of Billy Graham. And then he's off into his usual kind of very effective stand-up comedy, improvised stream of consciousness litany of basically responses to remind people of things he's done on television lately. Whatever Donald Trump is, he is primarily a television celebrity. When I think of Billy Graham, I think of someone who has been effective speaking on television. But Billy Graham is not a man who has lived his life going every day from photo op to photo op. He does that a little bit when he's in town for a crusade because he's trying to get people out to his event. But once again, that's just not Billy's style.
So to my original question, your reaction, okay, when you saw those polls that Trump was leading, and it has not abated, leading among those who are evangelical-leaning Republicans.
Well, I mean, that's the sort of thing that if there were 3 Republican candidates in the race, and he had the highest percentage of self-avowed evangelicals were cheering for Trump, then I'd say, gosh, this is bizarre. This is strange. We got to deal with that. But when, what are there, 66 candidates currently in the race? And they're dividing these things out pretty thin at this stage. So to say that the man has 20 or 28% of people who are self-avowed evangelicals, that's not all that shocking to me in light of his celebrity and name recognition factor. An evangelical leader the other day, when I made a comment about Trump, wrote me and went, name me one major evangelical leader who has endorsed Trump. which is not the same thing as having said something about him that kind of is like, gosh, it's interesting what he's doing, which would be, I think, a paraphrase of what Franklin Graham said. But name me a major evangelical leader who has endorsed this guy. I couldn't name a name. So that's a key thing. The second is the minute pollsters do what they always should do, and what George Gallup always did, the late, great George Gallup Jr., what he always did is he always included a question that separated out, how often do you go to church? And when you get to people who go to church once a week, more than once a week, or almost every week, the Trump numbers plummet down to less than half of what they would be otherwise. So to some degree, you and I are discussing what you and I have talked about many, 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 many times, which is what does the word evangelical mean? And what percentage of Americans would say they're an evangelical, would say they're born again, would use that kind of language, versus what percentage of the American public is actually kind of walking the talk of practicing the faith? I think that's a very real question here with Trump.
Well, I agree with you there, if you don't mind. I agree with you completely. That's the real question. But is it academic if 85% of Americans are nominally Christian or something like that? Does it matter in the end?
Well, yeah, let's go with – I'm going to stick with Barna and Gallup and say 75% of Americans are nominally religious, or now into the nuns unaffiliated category. I think the more important question is – what is the long-term effect on the Republican race if journalists continue to use the word evangelical in such an indiscriminate manner? If they continue to yell, this is the evangelical man, this is the evangelical man, to what degree does that totally divide and kind of screw up what's going to be a very complex Republican nomination process, you know, altogether with this many candidates?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about Donald Trump and evangelical voters. It's Thursday afternoon, August the 27th. When we come back, he has tipped his hand on a few religious questions. We'll get Terry's thoughts on that after this. Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This. Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like being female, and I have never felt even remotely bad about being female. I don't know if that's because I've always steadfastly avoided women's magazines, which I think are just designed to make you feel bad.
Journalist Molly Ziegler-Hemingway speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
But I've always known that being female is pretty awesome, and the only time it actually occurs to me to even feel remotely bad about it is when feminists start telling me that I'm doing everything wrong. And I think it's so interesting that feminists have such a problem with these traits that we do associate with women a little bit more. Feminists are on this campaign to make women more like men.
You can listen to Molly's presentation, Making the Case for the Differences Between Men and Women, and teachings by Paul Meyer, David Menton, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk on an audio DVD from the 2015 Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 before Labor Day. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about Donald Trump and evangelical voters. You were speaking before the break, Terry, about the kind of the nominal plurality of Christians in the United States. I wonder if Trump continues to play in that, even as he kind of tips his hands on some religious questions. There was a question about forgiveness that early on where he said something to the effect of, well, you know, I don't really feel the need to ask God for forgiveness. I'm doing my best. And then a little bit later, he said, well, I guess when I eat my cracker and drink my sip of wine, I'm kind of asking God for forgiveness. What do you make of that, Terry?
The man is rather comfortable in his own skin in front of a microphone. But would you call those remarks, under anybody's worldview, would you call those graceful? I think no. I don't even think those are graceful to a mainline Protestant audience. However, let me go back to that original point. He has to pound the Bible Belt. And even if he just gets the nominally Christian, celebrity-applauding Bible Belt folks to turn out, it's really going to mess up this process. And, you know, the ultimate irony to me, if you're as cynical about Trump as you can probably tell that I am, everybody forgets that Bill Clinton never received a majority of the public vote. When I ask my students all the time that, you know, about Bill Clinton being elected president, I said, do you have any idea what kind of, you know, numbers Bill Clinton get? And after you remind them who Bill Clinton is, you know, and they remember Monica Lewinsky and whatever, they always say, oh, he won in landslides. He was one of the most popular presidents ever. Once he got over these moral problems, and his popularity was always really high. And I went, that's not my question. I ask percentage of the vote in the elections. And what these students do not know is the name Ross Perot. I mean, and that Bill Clinton didn't win in two-way elections. He won with a minority of the vote because of the presence of Ross Perot, who over moral and social issues, particularly in the first race, hated George Herbert Walker Bush's guts for reasons that run back in Texas history and oil history and all kinds of things like that. So if what is Trump doing? Trump continues to say, well, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll just run as a third-party candidate. And if Hillary survives Emailgate, and we have a Republican versus Hillary and Trump getting 20-30% of the vote out of the celebrity name recognition, isn't he funny, won't this be wild factor of American life, what happens again?
Let's talk a little bit about his ability to...
You're not going to answer me, huh?
I think the answer is obvious, and I think it's... I think it's highly plausible as well.
I think it's probable. Once again, he's got it out for somebody. I don't know who. Maybe it's Jeb Bush. Hmm. But he has it out for somebody. And besides just his own, you know, towering, the Trump Tower ego, something else is going on here. And his, you know, his history is as a socially and morally progressive Democrat. What's he now doing claiming he's a pro-life, gosh, I love Billy Graham, Republican? It is one of the more astonishing star turns in recent American politics. And it has everything to do with appealing to the emotional, angry, we're left out, we want somebody to slap the establishment for us attitudes that are so common in whatever kind of broadly defined evangelical subculture is at this moment in time.
Let's talk about its ability to just suck the air out of the room so no one else who is running with him, alongside him, can even breathe anymore, and to occupy hours upon hours of network news time every night.
Well, at this point, if the media tends to lean toward the morally progressive kind of pro-Democrat stance in this kind of post-Bill Keller New York Times editor age that we live in, if you're presuming that one of the things the press wants, you know, the old saw, they're just here to sell newspapers, they just want ratings. Well, let's just for a moment assume that that's the dominant theme here. Is there any incentive, if you're in the media right now, to not want Trump in the race?
Oh, golly. I mean, he's a meal ticket.
Yeah. What was that Stephen Colbert, is he Colbert anymore, or are we going to go back to Colbert?
He's Colbert-ster, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you know that guy. He has just said, basically, God has put me on the planet to be able to do a late night television with Donald Trump running for president. You know, like, what else? What did I do right for God to be able to grant me this gift? Which is a great one-liner, but does anybody in the media want Donald Trump not running? Does anybody in the media, does the vast majority of the media want a morally conservative Republican to win? Based on moral and cultural issues and just looking at the numbers in the poll. If you do your media bias study homework there, you know that the one thing that elite press tend to agree on is they tend to be either Democrats who lean left on moral and cultural issues, or they tend to be kind of libertarian-style Republicans. That would be the case even, say, at the New York Post or at Fox News in the Rupert Murdoch world, leans to a more libertarian approach to life. So do any of them not want Donald Trump in the race? No, of course they want Donald Trump in the race. Then you throw in one more factor. If you had to produce a three-way campaign for a wounded, extremely unpopular Hillary Clinton to be able to win, do you want Donald Trump in the race?
Yeah, I think so, on the balance, yeah.
So who doesn't want Donald Trump in the race? Or who should want more Donald Trump out of the race?
Every Republican who has any aspiration for the office, they desperately want him out of the race.
And any Republican who basically is a moral and social conservative in a consistent basis and wants to see a strong ticket with some prayer of being able to get Latino and female votes, right?
Yes.
So once again, does that sound like Donald Trump? I'll take that as a no.
Yeah, it's a no.
It's a no.
let me toss one more in there, and that is, there seems to be some anxiousness to see someone else throw their hat in the ring, and that's good old Joe Biden. I cannot figure that one out, except that maybe Joe Biden is the closest thing the Democrats have right now to a Donald Trump.
Oh, no, that's not how I see it at all. I wrote a letter as a pro-life Democrat. I wrote a letter the other day that I put on my Facebook page in which I sent this. I'm outing myself here. I hope readers are not terribly offended. I sent this note to the vice president's office at the White House, and it was a note urging Joe Biden to run. And I said, basically, I'm a pro-life Democrat. I am a Eastern Orthodox Christian. Life issues are non-negotiable for me, but I would like to see the Democratic Party run a candidate that I think would at least be willing to discuss compromise towards centrist positions on crucial issues of religious liberty and life issues. And I said, whatever you want to say, I didn't say it this way, but whatever you want to say about Joe Biden, within the party, he's had a long, sustained career with great honor to his party. Now, Republicans may laugh at that. They've got to think about how Democrats view Joe Biden. And then I ended by saying there is no way that I could consider voting for Hillary Rodham Clinton because of the scandals in her past and the pall this would cast over the party. Please give morally conservative Democrats a candidacy they could at least consider listening to. Okay, so all I meant by that is that Joe Biden, whatever you want to say, Biden is an old school, to some degree, old coalition Democrat. I think he would be. I was in an argument with an evangelical leader in email the other day, and I asked this question. Let's flash back to Obamacare, and let's say that Joe Biden happens to be the president of the United States at the moment you're attempting to put together national health care. Can you see him going to the mattresses, as they would say in Godfather language? Can you picture him going to the mattresses without a single word of support from the National Catholic Bishops Conference, the Vatican, and the crucial pro-life Democrats in the upper Midwest who know in labor country that if they have to vote for this thing, it's going to cost them their political careers and probably cost the Democrats the House of Representatives, which is exactly what happened. Can you see Joe Biden doing that?
What was the response?
He never answered me. I think at that point, Biden would have been willing to talk. I think he still would have wanted it. But you know what? The U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference wants national health care. You could have had a conscience clause and have had all kinds of votes come across the aisle on health care, or at least some, and you wouldn't have killed a number of crucial, pro-life, morally conservative Democrats in the upper Midwest and labor union country. You would not have cost them their careers in the next House election and help contribute to your party's loss of the House of Reps. Joe Biden wouldn't have done that. I don't think he would have. In that sense, I think you're not giving Biden enough credit, whatever you want to think of him. And trust me, I know all about things he said. I know all about his he used to have a fairly pro-life voting record. He's now just by the books, liberal on all the moral issues. I know all of that. But what I'm saying is, in some sense, Biden understands the makeup of the old Democratic Party, and I can't picture him stabbing his party in the way that others might. So, watching Biden is an interesting thing right now. I'm sure you've noted the headlines in the last 48 hours, pondering whether Biden knows more about what's in the Hillary emails than the public does, because he's been on the other end of all the emails with the White House. Is he pondering coming into the race because he knows things we don't know? Interesting speculation.
Finally, then, returning to Trump with about the last minute here, you made the case there pretty well that the media would just love to see this thing continue and love to see that kind of three-way race and its outcome there. You said probable. Are you willing to make a prediction at this point about Trump's immediate political futures?
No. And you know what? I'm other than tragic manifestations of what could happen, I'm not that interested in it. Here's what I'm interested in. I want to know at what point actual, conscientious, linear-thinking, intelligent evangelical leaders begin to call for meetings or something and start trying to get this situation on a rail towards sanity. Right now, like you said, he sucked all the air out of the room. At some point, key evangelicals, and I mean real evangelicals, not pretend evangelicals, the real leaders of the evangelical movement have got to be asking themselves a question at this point. When do we start to speak, and when do we create some forums to try to get this on track and get some answers?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks again.
Glad to be here.
When we come back on this Thursday afternoon, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 4, Finding Christ There. Our series, Christ in the Old Testament, right after this. Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Mount Zion Lutheran Church in Greenfield, Wisconsin, is a congregation of those gathered by the Spirit of the Lord around His saving Word and sacraments. At the center of our life together is the divine service of the risen Jesus, the Lamb of God who was slain, who takes away the sin of the world. If you are in the Milwaukee area, we invite you to share with us in our Lord's gifts of forgiveness and new life. Services are on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 9 a.m. For more information, visit our website at MountZionGreenfield.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Caucabeca Falls, Ontario, Canada. St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.